From the Germanic American Institutes in St. Paul, Minnesota, this is Here and There. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institutes.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are... Here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. The journey today takes us into a more classic style episode. A trio is back with you. Of course, it's Günther welcoming you back to another episode. Then I do have Erin Hart, my now trusty sidekick here with our podcast. Erin, hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am fantastic, and the trio with delayed introduction is being completed today by Gina Anderson, our executive director at the GI. Gina, how are you?
I'm doing well. Love being here. Thank you.
And we are pushing Gina back into time, so to speak, a little bit of a time capsule, if you will. Gina used to be a German teacher. And that which usually is filled by Catherine suddenly today is transferred over to Gina. We are talking grammar, and this is where you come in, Gina. Ready to go?
I believe so.
you look and sound almost happy about this.
To all the other grammar files, grammar nerds out there, I am one of you, so... I know we connect on a different plane than the rest of the people of the world, but yes, I will talk about grammar at any time.
Awesome. And then, of course, we do have adjacent subjects just as well today. It's all about news in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, predominantly a little more from the Austrian side, perhaps, today. But not news in terms of the latest headlines, but news in terms of where do you actually get them from? How did they come together? What are the news like in Austria's perhaps compared to the US. And then, of course, we do have house updates. So let's dive into it, talking about grammar. And one of the things, as an instructor also, that I'm noticing that every once in a while becomes a sticking point is word order.
Yes.
This is where the grammar file, is that what you call it?
Calling myself.
Okay. So grammar file, word order, what does the German learner need to know?
It's such a different concept for the English speakers about how important word order is in the German language. It's in some way so highly structured, yet flexible. but I like to step back and sort of with metacognition think about how I look at word order both in the English language and how that compares to German and sort of where are they similar and where are they different. And with the German language, so much of word order is used to place emphasis on what the speaker wants to emphasize. So if you think about German culture, what's very important in German culture, we know, is being on time. Like punctuality is very much a part of German culture, and it's one of those aspects of the German culture you either just love or it drives you nuts. But I happen to love the fact that everything is on time and punctual. So it makes sense that time would be an element that sort of rises to the top when you're talking about the flow of something in the sentence. So we all know, or at least those of us who are learning German know, that the verb is anchored there in second position. And it always stays in second position unless you deviate into clauses, but I will not digress into clauses. So you can, ways to emphasize what it is you want to emphasize as a speaker is by moving something else into first position. But also when a sentence is being put together and you're trying to say where you're going, when you're going, and how you're going to someplace, then we follow this rule called TMP. Time, manner, place. And the biggest rule is that time comes before place in the German language. So if you say, ich gehe am Freitag ins Kino, right? I'm going to the movies on Friday. So it's almost the flip for us as English speakers. We tend to put the place before the time. So we would say, yeah, I'm going to the movies on Friday, right? That's what sounds right. But if we say, I'm going on Friday to the movies, it feels just a little off, because just the way we structure are the combination of time and place. But with German, the time is what's important. So we got to emphasize that first. So that's going to come first if you have a series of prepositional clauses. So I think that's interesting also when a native German speaker is speaking English and something just sounds just a little bit off. It's because in their head, they're translating word for word. So they would say, I'm going on Friday to the movies. And all the words are correct, the grammar is correct, everything from a structural level is fine. But what feels a little off for us is that flip-flopping of the time and the place. And so I just think that's an interesting thing to note. The M in the middle for TMP stands for manner. And Gunter, did you have a question? You're looking at me like you might have a question. And I always love it when I can answer a native German speaker's questions about their grammar questions about their own language.
No, actually, the TMP concept is one that I emphasize frequently as well, simply because it allows us to engage in patterns, if you will, right, that perhaps give the beginning German learner more of a blueprint, if you will, to hold on to where to put certain words to have an expression that is more German than it is English in terms of structure. But commonly, I still find, particularly in the beginning phases, that students struggle with the adequate placement. And then the question, of course, frequently comes along the lines of, well, is it always like that? Does it always have to be TMP? Or can M be behind P? Or can P actually take the lead when we want to emphasize the place that we're meeting at as opposed to time? And this is honestly where, as a German native speaker, a difficult question to answer. So what would you suggest as...
I would say if there's something that really needs to emphasize, what generally happens is that's what's maybe put into first position in the sentence. So if you really want to emphasize, oh, it's to the movies we're going on Friday, not, you know, to school or whatnot, then ins Kino gehen wir am Freitag, versus flip-flopping the time and the place when they're side by side. At least that's been my very superficial analysis.
Now, you mentioned, and this is perhaps going a little bit off track here, but you mentioned that the verb is anchored in the second position. And that is, I would say, also one of the sticking points, is that in the heat of the moment of putting a sentence together, beginning German learners commonly move the verb a little bit further to the back than it actually needs to be. And suddenly the sentence doesn't necessarily sound genuine German anymore. And I think that could perhaps be the outcome of the sentence is not always being led with a personal pronoun. So for instance, ich gehe. Mm-hmm. So when we now emphasize time, am Donnerstag, so on mm-hmm. Thursday, go I, am Donnerstag gehe ich. So now mm-hmm. I have two words preceding mm-hmm. the verb. How do we get past that thought barrier that the second position is not akin to the second word being the verb?
Right. So first position is a Platzhalter, a placeholder for a concept like a prepositional phrase or a short adverbial phrase. So it is not by any means just one word, but what functions together as a unit. So you would never separate in Freitag if you were saying on Friday. So I know it's a hard habit to break or concept to want to say am Freitag ich gehe. And it's not the end of the world. And this is as you know, as we teachers say, Germans, Austrians, Swiss will love you regardless for trying and for using the language and so on if you didn't get the subject-verb combo in perfect position. But I think what's also a little tricky for us non-natives is then now we flip-flop the verb and the subject and we have something else in first position, which is normally what you do for a question. So to complicate things. So it's the complexity of the sentence structure is, I think, one of the aspects that makes me love the language so much and figuring out how all the pieces fit together. And I was one of those kids in sixth grade who loved to diagram sentences. I don't think anybody does that anymore, but I think it really helped me to visualize how the pieces of the sentence are put together, almost like a puzzle. So don't get too hung up on whether you're getting it exactly right, but just know that if you've got something you really want to emphasize, put that in first position, and then your subject, or pardon me, excuse me, and then your verb and then your subject, because your subject and your verb are always together, which is nice because we don't even do that in English all the time. So,
yeah. And Gina, what was, I'm going to break in because my role in this is that I'm a German student, former German student who has forgotten everything. So this is really helpful. So I feel like you were going to say something about manner.
Right. So, yeah. So for, what does that remember. Mean? Yeah, yeah. What does manner mean? Manner means like how it is something is done. So an adverbial phrase, I think, is how we would technically qualify that in English. But you might say, ich gehe am Freitag schnell ins Kino, right? I'm going quickly into the movie. So that schnell would be an adverbial type of description. So the M, I would say, is the least pertinent of the three. It's really that time versus place concept. And if you have a chance to study other languages too, I think it's so interesting about what that placement of time or place, about what's more important in that culture somehow, about how those descriptors, those units function. So I have some other thoughts on that, but I won't go off into other languages. But
you know, as father used to say, 5 minutes early is being on time, and that rings very much true to this day. That being on time really means a lot in our culture, and we measure, I suppose, also the connectivity to other people by how much they are on time or how late they are. I think it really is a very time exact culture that we're experiencing.
Yes, planning events here at the GAI, we have the real start time for what's the published start time, and then what's the time in our head where we know we have to be ready to start and be open to the public, because invariably with any event, the first person will arrive and be ready for the doors to open or participate or be in line by at least 20 minutes before the actual event starts. So we have embraced that. If we're going to be a German organization, then we embrace that part of the culture and know that we need to adapt to that. So,
I noticed this with, we are a little bit off the grammar topic, but I suppose it still caters to the idea of TMP. And I noticed that when I start classes, particularly now via Zoom, as this podcast, by the way, is also recorded via Zoom again, when a class starts, it starts on the dime. As soon as my watch flips to 6:30 p.m., that's when I get rolling. So it's, I guess, really just massively ingrained. And then some people trickle in a little bit later, 2-3 minutes later. And I suppose this is perhaps more the American way. But we wouldn't expect something that's completely relative to time, such as some of the mid-Asian cultures, where time truly is relative to the degree that they show up half an hour later, and it's still socially acceptable. So yeah, quite interesting.
I remember I went to some weddings when I lived in the Middle East, and the invitation said 8 o'clock, and my friends were like, no, you don't go until 10, like 10 p.m. I was like, but that is 2 hours late. Why? It was really hard for me. Also quite late at night, that culture. I'm definitely a fan of the German punctuality. I feel at home here. question on like, what is a good way to learn the word order? I feel like when I was a student, you know, our teacher had us like she had a bunch of cards with the words, and we had to like put the sentence in order. Is that sort of what you meant, Gina, by like mapping it out? Do you still do that in your German classes, Gunther?
Well, I still do something similar in a way that, and our course book actually has this as well, where sentences are just rearranged to where they're incorrect. And then it is the learner's opportunity to just place everything where it's supposed to be. I took it one step further, depending on the class that I'm teaching, where I take stories that are A1 or A2 level compliant, and I just start to basically make them wrong. So I change articles to be incorrect. I change verb endings to be incorrect, or adjective endings rather. Or I change the tense, so suddenly it falls out of place. And I mark those things up in red, so everybody knows, okay, wait a minute, there is something that's wrong. I just now have to figure out how to make it right. And sometimes that includes also by just gratuitously changing the verb to something that doesn't fit at all and placing it elsewhere, or changing the time and a place organization to where the sentence shouldn't really make a lot of intuitive sense anymore. It's still there with all the elements, but they just don't sound as German anymore. And I found this to be quite interesting, to turn the German learner into the correcting institution, if you will, and sort of a little bit into the teacher.
That sounds good for sure. I don't know if we've ever covered this yet, but I feel like my favorite grammar topic back in the day, it's all coming back to me now, was verbs. I just really loved memorizing all the verb forms and the ones that were different. Of course, now I don't remember the terms, but you know, we had like this big call, like a big table of verbs. And so it'd be like the infinitive, present, past, and then past perfect, you know, like fliegen, fliegt, flog, ist geflogen, you know, for like flying. And then gehen, geht, ging, ist gegangen. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if we could cover that in the future, I would be very happy director of communication.
So that is actually one of the things that I particularly do for perfect tense scenarios, where we have basically present tense, preteritum, and then essentially the past participle, which relates to the perfect tense. And yes, the story that I tell, and now we are really way off the path here, is the story that I commonly tell is I remember going from the tram station to first grade and just incessantly reciting those tables. Gehen, ging, gegangen, fliegen, flog, geflogen. And I just drilled this into my head. And what's really interesting about this is now decades later, if there is a verb that I haven't used in, well, decades, and I actually don't really recall, I immediately go back to reciting. And what's interesting about this is that you sort of fall back into the feel for it and put things together that suddenly function again. So that was my way. I don't know if that's the contemporary way though.
Okay, so I have a question here. So are you saying that as a native speaker, you would learn all the tenses of a new verb when you learned it?
Yes.
Because I don't think we ever did that with English. I can't ever think about learning a verb in school and learning the tenses of the verb. Like Aaron, was that your experience? Does that sound familiar at all? Like I would never have been like
I remember it so distinctively for German though, because I would like pace my house reciting the verb.
I know. I would just like to give a shout out to my high school German teacher who made us memorize all the tenses of the verb whenever we learned them. Because in my head, it's a verb, like if you like gehen, it's always gehen, right? Gehen, ging, ist gegangen, geht. Like it's all blah, blah, blah. Like it never just was a verb by itself after, you know, level one. So shout out to Herr Thompson out there.
But no, I mean, that's how I remember it, that in German class in elementary school, this is how we started. We just really recited those lists. It was repetition upon repetition upon repetition, some more. Really incredibly annoying at the time, but now going back, it's like there was utility in this and it really helped a lot. And
well, so in the same question, if you learned a new noun, did you learn the article with the noun, or did you just all intuitively know what the article would be?
For the most part, on the common nouns, we learned the article just simply because obviously we speak natively German, so it sort of is embedded within us. But even today, I have to sometimes stop and wonder, what is the article here? And that is particularly prevalent with new nouns, such as, for instance, newer nouns, the compact disc, CD. Mm-hmm. And now there are differing opinions. For me, it's the CD. However, I commonly see it written out with das CD. Das Virus is the virus masculine or neuter. And I'm on the fence on that too, because I would gravitate towards der Virus. I don't know why I want to make it masculine. I mean, that might be an entirely different story on its own. But then in writing, in the newspapers, I see it written as das Virus.
Yeah, because I remember learning at some point, most foreign words are das. So virus would be, probably would that be considered a foreign word? So it'd be das, but I agree that der seems to sound right structurally. So I find it a great comfort that you as a native speaker can have questions about this as well. So
if my class enrollment rate is down after this, we've got a problem. No, but I mean, that really just gets to say that not everything is just clear cut. There are questions, particularly as contemporary language modifications are concerned, that even essentially give us a pause for thought. And I noticed this more and more of late, particularly as technology terms come into play. We have about, and I think my TA told me that a couple of years ago, about 5,000, between 4,000 and 5,000 English words embedded in the German language. So for instance, the word chatting, to have a loose, lighthearted conversation, is now a functional word in German, which instead of chatting or to have a chat, in German it's used as chatten. So with a double T-E-N. Sounds atrocious to me personally. But from the perspective of an English native speaker, and now there's a word I can hold on to because I know the meaning of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it is also the outcome of text language, of technology, that is sort of a global language.
Getting worked up
of
all these questions I've always wanted to ask a native speaker.
Oh, well, fire away. No. Gina, we have you so go ahead. Ask away.
Well, so also when you're learning a new verb, and if maybe it's you're having this as a transitive or intransitive question, is it haben oder sein as a help verb? Do you feel like there's some, is it okay to say, for example, with the verb, let's say fahren, which we typically learn as always an intransitive verb. So ich bin nach der Schweiz gefahren. But if you want to say, I drove him to Switzerland, is it okay to say, ich habe ihn nach der Schweiz gefahren?
Ich habe ihn in die Schweiz gefahren.
It can't function. Is that kind of creeping in, that these intransitive verbs will function as transitive verbs? Because I mean, I think that's more of an anglicizing thing, is to, rather than I drove with him, but I drove him to Switzerland. You didn't really drive him, but that's something that we would say. So now is the grammar shifting as well to be, you can use haben oder sein?
Oh yeah.
Or has it always been that way?
It's kind of always been that way. There is some creep, if you will, where suddenly there's some modification where haben and sein can be applied, so depending on the structure and what I'm actually trying to express. Commonly, again, the way I explain this, if you will, haben is when you express a German sentence and you want to use haben as the verb, then I would simply ask the preloaded question, do I own this thing? Do I have possession of it? Then I usually use the verb haben. If it's a change of state, then I usually use the word sein. However, that is not a blueprint. That is not a formula that works all the time. So there is some leeway left and right. So for instance, change of state, if I were to eat something, to me that means change of state. Because I'm removing something from the plate, my hand moves to the mouth, a slice of pizza, and the change of state occurs by me just devouring the pizza. However, that doesn't quite work like that. Is ich habe gegessen. So it's possession here.
Well, you're making this way too complicated, Günther. There's a very simple test that you can use.
Okay.
It's called what I call the it test. If you can say the word it after your verb and it makes sense, then it's haben. I ate it. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's haben. If it doesn't make sense, like I became it or I flew it, in the sense of you're flying from here to there, then it's sein. So if it passes the it test, it's haben. Otherwise, it's sein.
Oh, I never heard that before.
All the it test is doing is asking, can this verb pick a direct object? So,
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I see you taking notes. I hope that one day, Günther, you will share that knowledge with your students because.
Yes.
I just still think of myself as a teacher. Maybe I can sort of teach vicariously by throwing a couple of nuggets your way.
I consider myself educated with a little trick now. I did not know about the it test.
Yes.
That is new. I like it. Thank you.
I have to give praise to Herr Thompson for that one as well.
Well, Herr Thompson is a very capable German instructor. So yes, that's certainly quite valuable. So summary. What's the takeaway of today's grammar session that went way above and beyond, but at its core, how would you summarize the takeaway, Gina?
Time before place, and that's I think a reflection of cultural emphasis on time and punctuality. So those of you who've never traveled to Germany, be prepared to be early or on time, and that knowing that also this function of any concept that wants to be emphasized can be emphasized by putting it in first place in the sentence, but then you have to invert your subject verb word order. So most important thing, verb subject then. And that's it.
Erin, any summarizing thoughts of what is now the officially longest grammar session we've ever done on the podcast?
I love it. Find yourself a Herr Thompson or a Gina Anderson. But yeah, no, for me personally, the takeaway is I would like to find my verb sheet and recite them again. I'm feeling really nostalgic for some verbs. Thank you for giving that back to me.
I think we're going to have to pull Gina in the classroom for a guest teaching session whenever you have time. I think that is almost overdue. Validated by the IT test.
This episode should be called like Take Your Grammar Nerd to Work Day. But yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to the obviously, I think, what will be a little more dry topic of today. Let's talk about news, not just news as to the current events, current happenings, but actually how do we get our news? How do we consume our news? Where do they come from? And how does all this actually function? But first, a trivia question for the two of you. If you were to guess, when do you believe that the first newspaper was published in Austria? What year?
Austria, 1685.
I know. Are we talking like stone tablets?
Yeah.
Like walked around.
Let me solve that for you. 1605.
1605. Yeah. I was close.
You were really close.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And until 1940, there were only 16 newspapers. And it expanded from there. It got bigger and bigger into the mid-2000s where we had basically the heyday of news. And now, of course, it contracted a little bit with a lot of news being disseminated online. So newspaper and the publishing industry is fighting the similar battles as we have it here in the US. In Germany, conversely, we had about 600 newspapers in the 1950s. And then it already shrunk in 65 down to 375, and it's even fewer nowadays. But it's quite interesting to just see how essentially everything has changed, where news have become much more local. So the Story Tribunes of the world, we have them, of course, also in Austria and Germany. But it even gets more granular than that. We have essentially what would be district newspapers, borough newspapers, if you will, where things are, of course, much smaller, but really very much centric to the individual district in which you're living. And that's particularly prevalent in Vienna.
What, so if you're, you know, although you are here in Minnesota, what do you turn to? Like, what news sources do you follow in Austria if you want, like, the full story on something?
Ooh, well, it depends on literally the quality of news that I want to read. The fast consumption news would be the Krone, the Crown, krone.at. Then that would be sort of the intersection of the Huffington Post, I suppose, merged with a little bit of Star Tribune, I guess, would be an adequate comparison. The next one would be the Courier, so the Courier, Courier.at, or AT for Austria. Those would be the fast and easy to digest print news. Then the higher level news, and this sounds almost wrong, but they're really looking for a different target demographic in terms of education, in terms of depth of development of the news stories, would be the Presse, so the Press, or their Standard, the Standard. Both are pretty high level newspapers where you actually have to immerse yourself rather deeply in the subject, and take a good while to actually read what's being written. Perhaps akin to the Wall Street Journal meets New York Times, the in-depth articles that are 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 word articles, you will find really well-written, very high-level pieces in those two particular papers. And I'm sure Germany has an equivalent of those, which I am not familiar with.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like on the German end, and Gina, you can jump in here if I go astray. But I feel like, so, and I did a little bit of research, but some of this came from my own experience living there. And I'm kind of like a newspaper nerd. Like, I really liked getting a whole bunch of newspapers and seeing how different things were covered in them. But so there's the Bild, which is, that is, I think, 1.37 million copies daily. So that's all over Germany. It's published by Axel Springer Publishing Company. And that's the largest and most popular tabloid, I guess you would call it. But that's, I think we're seeing the Bild everywhere, you know, like anywhere you would buy a bottle of water or a stick of gum. Or I was just like laying around on the subways and it was pretty sensational sometimes. I feel like when I was on a train and I wanted to be smart or look smart, I would pick up a copy of Die Zeit, which is a weekly newspaper. I feel like it's independent and more liberal leaning. The Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung is a daily newspaper that I guess we would think, consider it more like the Wall Street Journal, because it's more of a conservative political views. I also feel like they had more business news as well. And then the Süddeutsche Zeitung. I thought they had really, when I was in Germany at least, I thought they had really good foreign policy coverage. And that is the national daily news in Southern Germany, and a more independent style of German, of journalism. So that's sort of my roundup. And then I think Die Welt has also been a big, it's conservative, and it was more of a, I don't know, there's Die Welt and Die Welt am Sonntag. Excuse me, I can't speak German or English today. Had a wide circulation, and that to me seemed more like USA Today, like general news, entertainment, and such, and also a more conservative.
Besides print media, when you lived in Berlin, did you listen to radio at all?
I did, but not for the news. Gosh, there was this radio station, and I need to remember what it was, but it was classical and movie soundtracks. Like, so you'd hear like a Mozart symphony, and then you would hear like I don't know, like the instrumental music from like the Titanic. Like, it was very sort of cheesy, and I think it was like what I listened to when I was like studying and such. So I guess I would say no.
Okay, well, let me take you back just ever so briefly down the path of radio broadcasting. It was actually completely opposing to the U.S. Radio broadcasting was done until the mid-90s, early mid-90s, by state-owned and operated radio. It's the Austrian Broadcasting Association, the ORF, which today still is the powerhouse of broadcasting, with having multiple TV channels, multiple radio channels. But only in the mid-90s did we finally change the laws to allow private radio, private frequencies in Austria. Before that, and that's where my beginnings were, we broadcast from just across the border from Italy by turning our essentially antennas towards Austria and sent our signal into Austria. So it was almost like pirate radio in its purest form, just jumping the border, driving to Italy, running into the station, doing my 12-hour shift because of travel distance. It wasn't that easy to just constantly drive back and forth. But that's how we did it. And we did it in Italy. There were several stations just outside the Austrian border, about 10, 15 miles into Italy, if even that far. And the same happened in Slovenia. The same happened in Germany, broadcasting down into Austria. So Austria was surrounded by pirate radio, if you will, until finally in the early 90s, those frequencies were opened up for private radio. And then we ballooned into, I think, about 50 or 60 stations across Austria.
But the ORF is still in existence?
The ORF, yeah, the Austrian Broadcasting Association, is still juggernaut. They have just an incredible budget in part because every law-abiding Austrian pays their broadcasting tax. Mm. Okay. So you, as much as think about radio, let alone owning one, or TV, you are paying tax. Not just on the item on purchase, but you are actually paying an annual tax for your broadcasting consumption. Very much the sticking point of a lot of heated discussion, of course.
And do you stream that from here so that you can stay connected?
I actually have not. I usually just run through the headlines and consume those in print. Simply because with the advent of podcasting, listening to radio in basically European radio or Austrian radio, just as much as US radio, has become incredibly cumbersome. Mm-hmm. I like things on demand without commercials, and if there's a commercial, I like to skip it. And that's the power of podcasting, which I think we are living right now, obviously in this format, but also I think it's slowly but surely running radio stations into significant issues by coming after their audience and of course also after the advertising dollars, and that doesn't stop short for Austria, Germany, and so forth either. The same actually goes for print media. With the advent of blogs, with things just basically being much easier accessible and no longer behind the paywall of having to buy a subscription service in terms of having your newspaper delivered to your door, or going to the newsstand, which used to be a thing. Who does that nowadays?
Do you know, just since I was not a radio listener in Germany, what is the German equivalent of the ORF?
I think the German equivalent of the ORF would be the ZDF, das Zentraldeutsche Fernsehen. I think in Bavaria, it's the BF, the Bayerische Rundfunk, BRF.
Yes.
And I am pretty sure the ARD is a state powerhouse as well. And then you have the smaller TV stations, smaller, quote unquote, RTL, so RTL Pro 7, Pro 7. Okay. Those are, I would say, among the big ones on the privatized side, and they are broadcast also via satellite. The third topic is what is happening at the house. Gina and Erin, you have the updates on that.
Maybe we'll go chronologically, and I'll start with April and May events. So on April 12th, coming up on next Monday, our spring session language classes start, and registration is open on our website. We have the start classes. You could be in a class taught by Günther or others. I think the Oberstufe say plus for the advanced speakers, I think that starts in mid-April, a little bit later, maybe April 24th or so. We also have on April 18th, we have an event called Learning from the Germans with author Susan Neiman. She is a philosopher and scholar who resides in Berlin, but grew up in the South. And she's going to be talking about lessons that we can learn from how the Germans dealt with their history with the Holocaust and post-World War II, and what lessons Americans can take about dealing with our past and the Civil War and Jim Crow and the different legacies, particularly in the South, but also in Minnesota. So that's on April 18th at 12:30 p.m. It's on Zoom. Registration is free, but you do have to register on our website. In May, backed by popular demand, on May 8th, Helga is back at the GAI in the kitchen, and she will be baking, I believe, two types of cakes, and details on that are forthcoming. And yeah, I think I'll leave our events there and turn it over to Gina.
So June, for the past, I want to say 64 years, has meant Deutsche Tage at the GAI. It's always the second weekend in June. So this year is the 11th and 12th. And I'm so excited to announce that we will be back. We will be live. It'll be a live event. So it is not curbside or virtual, but actual people coming to the house to celebrate. However, we will have to flex the event somewhat to be in alignment with the latest CDC guidelines. So at this point, the model will work that we're asking people to pre-register for a time slot. And at this point, it's 250 people is the maximum number that we're allowed to have on site at one time. But 250 people is a very robust, full and fun beer garden. But that is rather than the just drop in and come whenever, we will need to ask people to pre-register. With that will come the purchase of a wristband that gets you in. And that is for multiple reasons. It's just that will help us with the ticketing process. And also Deutsche Tage is a fundraiser. So we are, like all nonprofits, inching our way towards the realm of financial stability after COVID. And so we're hoping that you can buy a wristband and then come on out, and we'll have so many favorites back this year that we know people have been missing, particularly two bands. The Bavarian Musikmeisters will be performing, as well as Alpensterne, everybody's favorite, will be performing live, as well as other musical entertainment, as well as dancers. Everything that you love about Deutsche Tage will be here. Vendors, the bar, hall honor. Mm-hmm. I won't disclose at this point, which will be our five beers on tap, but you can guess that at least three of your favorites will be there. And a fun outdoor celebration. And we hope that you can come out and join us. So more details to come, but you'll be able to register on our website. Again, that's Deutsche Tage, June 11th and 12th.
This is, I think exciting is inadequate. that is amazing. So, wow, I did not expect that. So great to hear.
We are going to be one of the first festivals of the season to be opening back up. And so it's going to probably take a while for people to learn these new processes with festivals and how it will work with crowds and registration and what kind of safety protocol might have to be in place. But I think it'll get easier throughout the summer as the regulations continue to lift and as people get more accustomed to this new model of coming together in large groups. But we are just so excited. And we had a really great event last year, the virtual Deutsche Tage. We pulled it together. We were determined to make sure that the event happened regardless, and we did. But it feels so great to know that the lawn will be open, the beer garden tables will be out, and people will just be coming back together for community and fun and celebration.
And what does that mean for the Oktoberfest?
Oktoberfest, we're hoping that if people continue to get their vaccinations and the state begins to open up, We are looking at hosting Oktoberfest again. I'm not at a point where I can disclose maybe what the model will look like, but just know come September, we do plan on having Oktoberfest live.
Wow. Okay, so 2021 has perhaps a modified sense of normalcy again as far as our events are concerned. So that's really good news. I think we'll just leave it with that because it rings so beautifully. Let's not distort that anymore. And with that being said, Gina, thank you so much for taking time out of your undoubtedly very busy schedule and joining us. Erin as well, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.
And that wraps this episode. Not bad. Quite the longest grammar episode we've ever had. Consider yourself informed. That is very true. Consider yourself informed on all the news and happenings and events, and please do regularly check, of course, with our website, geimn.org, for the latest news and also how to get tickets for the Deutsche Tage event, finally back again in person, and then hopefully forthcoming the Oktoberfest. So stay tuned for all that. If you have any news and feedback for us, again, podcast@geimn.org. This is Günther signing off. Until next time. Tschüss.